recorded live.
You are listening to the Geocaching Podcast, a podcast about everything geocaching, where you'll hear tips and tricks, interviews with cachers, and lots more. Welcome to episode 47 of the Geocaching Podcast. Tonight we're going to talk a little bit about caching workflow and what that means to us as cachers. First, I want to remind everyone, though, that we are live, and the phone number is 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. Go to geocachingpodcast.info, and where our show notes are, and you can also figure out how to get on our show live. We'd love to have you on our show because that's kind of how we shape our show. We have callers call in, and we take their calls, so we'd love to hear from you guys. Again, the number is 724-444-7444, and our ID is 7525. Tonight, I do have Daryl on the phone with me as our co-host. Welcome to the show, Daryl.
Hey, how's it going? Actually, you know, I was following you on Twitter, and I think you were kind of under the weather this weekend.
I actually was. Friday and Saturday, I was okay. And Saturday during the day. Sunday, I started to get sick and just had the flu, couldn't keep anything down. Sunday, I was pretty much sleeping all day and catching up on podcasts, really is what I did. I just stayed in bed and catch some podcasts. That's pretty much all I did. But I did note, I did find this interesting, I found this today, that Trimble's Geocache Navigator is now available on the Nokia N95, N82, and 6110. And basically, it's a free download. You just go to the Geocaching Navigator website. And I'll go ahead and put that on our show notes. But it's free for the phones, but you probably want to have a unlimited data plan because there's a lot of data. Basically, what it is it's a full-featured geocaching application that connects right with the geocaching website. They've had it for a couple phones before, but now it's for a bunch of the Nokias. That's really what's been going on here. What's up with you, Daryl?
Well, Sunday we went out caching in the brutal cold weather that we had. I think it was officially 1 degree with a negative 30, I want to say, wind chill. And
cool.
We had we had about a foot of snow up in Frankenmuth, which is this little tourist town. Just between Flint and Saginaw, if anyone's familiar with the state of Michigan. We did get three caches, despite the foot of snow, but only one of them was a real cool cache. It was a seven-stage multi that took us from shop to shop downtown, and we had to go kind of window shopping to find the bits of the coordinates, and that was fun.
That sounds kind of fun.
You know, I really like when a lot of people, or when a lot of the chambers and, you know, these guys get into caching in that kind of way. Because it's, you know, it's fun. It gives them some exposure and, you know, takes us around to some of the cool shops. You know, it's a little tourist kind of town. And, you know, it's kind of fun to just kind of window shop in those kind of areas.
Now, when you said seven-stage multi, though, I was thinking seven-stage multi in the negative 30 weather, I can't imagine that being fun. But now that you said, kind of going to shops, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, that was the whole thing, is that, you know, we went from shop to shop, and every so often we'd go in and do some shopping. Like, you know, Dree's favorite is obviously the Cheese Haas up there, which, you know, she had to stop and buy some samples.
Yeah.
But, you know, our buddy was still caching with his Colorado, which he's really getting to like, still having some issues with it. But he was telling me that there's been a lot of discussion as of late that the Colorados, which were used for the Where I Go event, had a newer version of the firmware than what's available currently. And the people that had talked with the representatives from Garmin had actually said, yes, this is a pre-release version. It is not ready for release, but it should be within about a week or two. So I think we're going to see a new update, and it does address some of the crashing issues that we've had. Anyone who's been following the Colorado has heard that I believe it's the ampersand character in a geocache description will lock the device completely, and you have to pull the batteries to get the device back up. And there's also a startup time issue. It's like anything over, I want to say it was 200 caches, would take more than 20 seconds to start up. And in many cases, it got bad. I think he was telling me it took over a minute to start up if he had 500 caches loaded in there. So that has been addressed in this new update. It does load much faster. It doesn't have the crash issues, but it doesn't address a lot of the other issues that we had, like not showing the caches on the map. Apparently, the word is from these people that were there talking with the Garmin guys that that is considered a bug, and they do intend to address it. So the good news is, even though it's not being fixed now, it is something that they plan to fix in the future.
Well, that's good.
So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to that device coming up to the point where we need it to be for geocaching, because it was a nice-looking device.
Mm-hmm. Just a few little flaws, as you get with any device that you when you first come out with a new device. So.
Right. But, you know, the 60s, when it came out, it had some, you know, each of those had some issues to deal with, but they were still good geocaching tools right from the get-go. You just had to work around some of the initial bugs. This one, it really doesn't work until they fix these couple of bugs and get it to be, you know, a really usable device. So unfortunately, it looks like we are going to have to wait longer than we did with some of the earlier models.
Well, yeah, and we kind of thought that would happen.
Oh, of course, it's a new device.
Yeah. Yep. Well, you want to move on to our topic for tonight of cache workflow. I know
Montu
was kind of scared when I said caching and working in the same sentence when we were talking about this topic. Just because, you know, caching and working don't normally go together, except for some of us, like you and me, try to work caching into our work day. But that's actually not what we're talking about. Tonight we're talking about cache workflow is basically what you do with the data when you want to go to a cache. So how do you get the data from GroundSpeak to whatever devices you use? How do you go about caching? It's how I would go ahead and define it. Gerald, do you have any other input as far as how you would define cache workflow?
Yeah, basically it's just the complete cycle of getting from GroundSpeak to the field and then getting that information back into GroundSpeak when you're done. And everyone's is a lot different, and that's why we're going to talk about it a little bit today. You know, give us some examples of what we're doing and what we found that works, and maybe some of our listeners can pick up some of those tips. And maybe our listeners have some other great tips, too, that they could pipe in with later.
Sure, yeah. After, we're going to go ahead and explain a little bit how Daryl and I do it. If you guys want to get on the call right now, go ahead and call 724-444-7444, and our talk cast ID is 7525, and we'll go ahead and get you on the phone. You can explain a little bit about that process that you go through, you know, getting the data to you and then back to GroundSpeak. I'll go ahead and kick it off here. I get two pocket queries per week that are 500 closest caches that I have not found. That includes the caches that are temporarily disabled because I want to have those in my database. So what I do is once I get those, I get them Monday and Thursday. So I have them for the weekend. Not a lot changes around my area like it does in Daryl, so I only need it twice a week. In the summer, it changes a little bit more. Caches come and go. But still, I find that two pocket queries per week is plenty for me. Once I get those, I enter them into GSAC right away. I download them, put them in GSAC. I then do a filter on the caches that didn't get a GPX update in the last 3 days. And the reason that I do this is because if I just put in a pocket query and I do a filter on ones that didn't come in the last 3 days, what happens then is it will filter out the ones that are most likely going to be archived. That not always is the case because sometimes newer caches come in, and so my 500 limit or, you know, closest ones get pushed out, and some of the ones that didn't get updated are actually still active. But in GSAC, you can do a quick check on that and check and see if they're still active just by pushing a few buttons, and it goes out and grabs that from the website. So I do that so I can just have the ones that are active. And then when we go caching, I fire up GSAC again. I filter out all the caches that are not active, and I export them. Or I'm sorry, I filter out all the ones. Yeah, I filter out the ones that aren't active. So I just have a set of caches that are active, and then I export those to my GPSR, and I also export them to the Mobi Pocket Reader that I have for BlackBerry. I send my caches to my BlackBerry so that I have a listing of them, but mostly the BlackBerry is just kind of for temporary lookup if I don't have cell phone access, because I like using the WAP. So when I go, I have a fresh set of things that are just active in my GPS. And then I also use, like I said, the WAP, and that's mostly for dropping bugs in and out of caches or seeing live stats of the cache right there. So if I'm having trouble with it, I want to see the hint, and I don't have that in my GPS, I can go ahead and just go to the WAP, which is wap.geocaching.com, and then I can, you know, drop bugs in and out if I have them, or I see what's happening on the cache right now. I usually don't log them until I get home, especially if we're just doing a few caches. Now, if we're doing a long trip, though, or caches that have a lot of, or a run where we're doing a lot of caches, what I do is I go ahead and bring my laptop along. It has GSAC, and then I keep the notes in the GSAC, and then when I get home, I filter out the caches. So, I filter out the ones that that I found and go ahead and log them. So that's basically my workflow. Daryl, what do you guys do for workflow?
Well, we really have two different workflows to get into the field. One of them is for our typical caching trips where, you know, we're going to go out and just do our normal caching. And the other is when we have those FTS, because, you know, you can't go through the same process if you're going to go hunting FTS as you do for your normal finds. So we'll start with looking at the caching trip to get us into the field. And we've got a ton of preset pocket queries that we don't normally run. You know, we'll have them to go to the Port Huron area, which is a little city further north of us that we just like going to visit anyway. You know, we'll have them for when we head down to Ohio to visit Dree's parents, you know, and these kind of things, so that they're handy, they're there. You know, we have our routes that we normally take in there, and we can just turn them on and get a pocket query for whichever one we want to do occasionally. But every day, I'm getting the local caches in. It comes out to be about a 20, I think it is, mile range for the 250 caches that we haven't found in our area, minus some on the ignore list. And I'll take those GPX files, whatever they are, and I load them in through Mac caching to load them into the GPSRs. But to get the information into CacheMate on our palms, I still use the Maxium Convert utility, because it will give me some information that Mac caching doesn't yet give me, like the hider of the cache and that kind of stuff. Now, when we're doing the FTFs, though, if we're at home, we'll load the GPSRs through the plugin, you know, which is great. I love that plugin. That's been such a helpful tool for those FTF hunts. And we'll also print the pages to the usually to the color printer, because most of the time lately it's been something that the color would help. And then if we're in the field, we get the notification through the phone anyway, and then we just copy down the GC number, go in through the WAP interface, manually punch it into the GPSRs, and we're already driving. Usually we're already on our way by the time we get it punched into the GPSR. Now, once we're in the field, we look up the information through the palm using CacheMate, or if it's a first to find where we don't have any information with us, we'll use the WAP interface on the phone. And when we finally find it, we always log through the WAP interface. I should say if we have service, because we've actually had a couple of them where we haven't had service in whatever area. So if that's the case, we just have to log manually at home. But we always log through the WAP interface just the time of the find. And then we back that up in CacheMate so that if for whatever reason it didn't actually post, we still have it in CacheMate. You know, if for whatever reason someone hit hit end instead of send, whatever. We like to have the backup because we have had some issues. And, it, you know, if we're out caching with a group, it's nice to have that backup just to compare because we can easily go and say, okay, show me in CacheMate all of the ones that we found today. We'll know roughly how many we had beforehand, you know, before we've gone out, and we'll just take a look at our stat bar real quick and say, okay, yeah, ours match. Okay, yours doesn't match. You know, which one did you miss? And it gives us a nice way to just easily do that in the field. And, you know, when we get back to a Wi-Fi spot, we're using the touchy pods a lot of the time, or I should say iPod Touch. We call them touchy pods, to go and update those logs, you know, as soon as we can so that it doesn't look a little bit weird to have just the time. Now, the one thing, too, that we should probably mention is that the WAP interface currently is not sending the notifications to the cache owner. So you're kind of sneaking around that, and the cache owner doesn't know that you logged just the time anyway.
Now, but, I forget. Did you say that they do get the notification though once you update it or not?
No, updates don't receive notifications. So there is no notification whatsoever for the cache owner that someone who's logged it initially through the WAP has done anything. So if you want the cache owner to see something, it's best to either email them through their profile or log it from the website directly. Don't use the WAP interface.
Mm-hmm.
But when we get back, we go and update all these logs either through the TouchyPods, which does take a little bit longer than doing it through the computer. Or if we have the computer, we'll do that. Or when we get home, we'll do that. And, you know, clean it up, make it nice and handy. And then when we're on trips, you know, out driving or whatever, going to and from a location, and even sometimes when we're just out caching for the sake of caching, we're actually locating those caches on the GPSR screen, either through the 60CSX or on either the IQ or the Street Pilot, so that we can kind of just drive around, don't have to have any great plan. We just go from cache to cache to cache. And when you're driving on a trip, you just kind of sit there scrolling through every so often and look for a rest area cache or whatever. When you want to take a break, go for lunch, you know, try to find a cache near lunch so that you can kill two birds with one stone. And then we look up the information on the Palm through CacheMate or through the WAP. Yeah, and a lot of the times we'll actually look up the information when we're at the cache through the WAP, because it could be that the information we had was a day or two old, especially when we're out on a trip, and someone might have logged a DNF, or, you know, and we'll do that a lot of the time too, just to confirm DNFs, make sure that some, you know, if there was one DNF as the last log, make sure someone else didn't find it after someone had logged a DNF. And then, you know, we always look at the WAP interface. We always log through the WAP interface, even when we're on the road, because it does make it a lot easier. And if you forget to log for a day or two, at least someone knows that you found it. And we always back it up in CacheMate. And again, you know, whenever we get Wi-Fi, we'll log or update the logs through the TouchyPod or through the computers when we get home or to the hotel or whatever. So, you know, that's our basic workflow. Works pretty well. We're not doing a whole lot of the filtering or anything through Mac caching, even though it can. Occasionally we've done that when we wanted to do like the Detroit Zoo caches. We'll do a filter on the keyword Detroit Zoo because some of the caches actually are puzzle caches that don't show that they're within the zoo, so you can't do a range. So that makes it nice and easy if we need it. But most of the time, we just load them all in and we go. Just, you know, find cache to cache to cache. No particular plan. Just, you know, whatever is close, we go and try to clear out a park or an area and then move on to the next one.
Okay, cool. Hey, it's always good to learn from other people. So I want to go ahead and open up our phone lines now. If you want to call in, 724-444-7444. Our TalkCast ID is 7525. We'd love to hear from you. Love to get you on the show. I'm going to go ahead. There's actually two people on our phone call right now that are on the phone muted. I'm going to go ahead and unmute Derm and Geekboy from Illinois. If either of you guys want to just put in any information on how you guys, what you guys workflow, how you guys do, if it's anything different from what me and Daryl have said, go ahead and put that in. If anyone else also is not called in and wants to, you know, chat, text it in, We'll go ahead and read it. So, we'll read it and get you going. Anyone have anything? All right.
Well, I guess we don't have any new insight on workflows. But, you know, what's the voicemail number if anyone has anything they want to call in maybe after the show?
I think I'm going to go ahead and definitely not use my computer anymore to call in because it keeps kicking me off every time I do.
Oh, no.
So, sorry about the me being kicked, everybody. Did anyone have any, while I was gone, anything that they had to put anything different?
No, I was just recommending, though, that if anyone has anything, they call the voicemail number, but I didn't have that number handy.
Number
what is that voicemail?
It's 206-350-3GPS, and that's our voicemail number. You can leave it, and it leaves us a message, and we can go ahead and play that on the next show. So, if that's it and no one has any other cash workflow ideas or any ways that they do it, I'm going to go ahead and end the show. We'll do a little post-show here. For those of you who are just listening recorded, we usually do a post-show. Sometimes it has something to do with the show, with what we're talking about. Sometimes it's completely different, but we do a post-show. So I'm going to go ahead and close the show. Make sure to join us next week, Tuesday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We do this again every week. It's live, and it's a lot of fun, so make sure you join us. Thanks for joining us this week, and have a good week.